Hello and welcome to Asbury Sermon Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. You're about to hear a sermon that was preached in the context of a worship service at Asbury Free Methodist Church in beautiful Perth, Ontario. We trust that it will help you move closer to Jesus. So without further ado, welcome to Asbury Sermons.
I want to put a little picture in your head this morning before we get into the sermon, but I want you to picture in your mind's eye one single silky gossamer milkweed seed floating across the air very gently on a summer day. Okay, that single seed just floating across the air. You think, ah, beautiful little seed. Do you think about the purpose of that seed? That seed becomes a milkweed plant. The milkweed plant is the only host for the monarch butterfly to lay its eggs and feed its caterpillars. So that little single milkweed seed floating by you, and you're thinking, that's such a beautiful little moment. It changes the focus of things for you. It's a busy day, and all of a sudden you see the single little seed go by. Wow. It's got purpose. It's got purpose. It's got meaning. Okay. God has put meaning into the things that he does. The widow's mite, the widow's coins, the widow's change, whatever. We used to walk around with piles of coins in our pockets. Did anybody remember those days? A lot of you do. Pennies meant something. And we would walk around with piles of coins. In Haiti, when Sharon and I lived there in the mid-70s, early 80s, there was not just the regular pennies, there were all these coins, coins and coins, piles of coins. Your pockets were full of them. And people would ask you sometimes for discob. They would say, blan, bamwe discob, give me 10 cents, which was 2 pennies. Okay. And one day we were traveling in from the country. We stopped at a little corner, bought some avocados, and the woman gave me a handful of dirty coins. And the deal was you just continued to pass on the dirty coins to the next person that you... So this we went into a marketplace after that, bought a piece of fruit of some kind. I just pulled out my coins, gave the coins to the woman, and as we were leaving, I heard her yelling at me, "Blanc, cobu pas bon." Okay, she was yelling it loud enough for everybody in the market to hear it. So I went back and took the coin that was no good. She was calling a white person, you know, your money's no good. So I went back and exchanged the coin and took it home, and I cleaned it up with a bit of abrasive toothpaste, and it was this coin right here. It's a 1748 Danish coin. It's got a sailing ship on it. You can't really see it that clearly, but that worthless coin to her was of no value, and of course it became this beautiful coin for me, which I really, I treasure it just because of that moment. The coin itself, I took it to a coin dealer and he said, if it was in perfect condition, it might be worth $5. So not a lot of value. Well, we're going to look at a lovely little a vignette this morning. And the gospel reading is tucked away into a much larger story. Okay, we often separate out the verse 41 to 44 as a standalone story. That's the widow came in. But previous to that, this account of the widow, it's in the midst of a growing controversy, and the context really is can't be separated. The widow's coin or the widow's mites can't be separated from this larger picture. And we're going to look at that picture for a moment before we look at the widow and her coin. So in Luke chapter 9, verse 51, It says, as the time drew near for him to ascend to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. This was a turning point in Jesus' ministry. He'd been healing and preaching, and now he's determined, I'm going to Jerusalem, and he knows what's ahead. Okay. He will be arrested, crucified, and ultimately resurrected. He will suffer on our behalf. He knows what's going on, and he's ready for it. Mark chapter 11, the previous chapter to the verses we read this morning, sees Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem. So just before, the day before the widow's coins were put in, Jesus enters Jerusalem, and he immediately goes to the temple. Mark tells us it's late in the day, so he goes back to Bethany, and the next day he returns. This is the day that he's going to observe the widow. And when he comes back, it says he's hungry, and he sees a fig tree, and the fig tree is not bearing any fruit. And Jesus says to the fig tree, may no one ever eat fruit again. May no one ever eat your fruit again, it says. And the disciples heard him say it. Okay. May you never bear fruit again. Well, it's a cloaked reference, it's a veiled reference to Jesus is talking about the Israelites, okay, the religious leaders. Okay. They have failed in their work of redemption, righteousness, and compassion. And Jesus is announcing to them, may you never bear fruit again. It's cloaked, but that's what Jesus is getting at. Then he arrives in the temple. The first thing he does is he takes issue with the corruption that's going on. He upsets the tables. He drives out the merchants. And in Mark 11:17, he said to them, the scriptures declare, my temple will be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you've turned it into a den of thieves. Okay. It's Tuesday, and Friday is coming. Okay. Jesus is nearing the end of his ministry, and he's on a collision course with the religious leaders in Israel. And then it says Jesus begins to teach. And he tells the story at the beginning of Mark chapter 12, the story about an owner who buys a field, plants a vineyard, rents it to the tenants, and then goes to another country. And when he comes back, he sends an envoy back to gather up some of the produce that would belong to him. And the tenants beat the guy up and expel him. So he sends another envoy. They beat him up. They abuse him. They strike him over the head. He sends another envoy. They kill him. And that continues and says, I'm going to send my son, my dear son, my only son. I'm going to send him. And they kill him, thinking, ah, now that the master's son is gone, we'll be the ones who own the vineyard. So what does the master do? He comes back and he kicks them out, reckons with these violent, wicked servants, says that he kills them. And again, it's a veiled reference to Israel not fulfilling the mission that God had given them, to bear the fruit of compassion and righteousness. So that's the place Jesus finds himself. In Mark 12:12, it says, the religious leaders wanted to arrest Jesus because they realized he was telling the story against them. They were the wicked farmers, but they were afraid of the crowd, so they left him and went away. And then Jesus continued to teach, and that's the passage that Ula read this morning. Okay. The next thing Jesus said was, beware of those teachers of religious law. But I think verse 40, if you could just pull that up for me, is the key verse for me. Yet they shamelessly cheat widows out of their property and then pretend to be pious and pretend they're pious by making long prayers. Because of this, they will be more severely punished. So instead of caring for God's vineyards, the teachers of the law treated everything as if it was their own. They did not cultivate the vineyard to bear fruit for the Lord. They've commandeered its resources for themselves. No justice, no compassion, no love for God. They're not waiting for the Messiah. The temple system is corrupt. They were not caring for the widows. They were not caring for the orphans. And Jesus uses some harsh words. Wicked, you den of thieves. And he's pronouncing a harsh judgment on Israel. You're not fruit-bearing, and a reckoning is coming. So that's the context, okay? And then in our narrative today, Mark says the crowds of people were dropping in money. Crowds of people. Okay, the temple was full of people. They were bringing tithes and gifts into the storehouse. Say, why were they doing that? Why were they bringing in this money? Well, many of those faithful people following God's direction through Moses for over 1,000 years, they had been bringing their tithes and gifts into the storehouse. And there wasn't just one tithe. There were probably three. Okay, but there was one relating specifically to the poor. In Deuteronomy 14, we read, at the end of every third year, bring the entire tithe of that year's harvest and store it in the nearest town. Give it to the Levites, who will receive no allotment of land among you, as well as the foreigners living among you, the orphans and the widows in your towns, so they can eat and be satisfied. Then the Lord your God will bless you in all your work. This is an amazing, I think, life-changing thing for many, many people in the world at that time period. Think about it. You took care of yourself, you took care of your family possibly, but God sort of entered or brings in this beautiful notion, we're going to take care of those people who can't take care of themselves. Okay. Every third year, the tithe's going to be brought in. The Levites, who were not farmers, they couldn't own land, need to be fed. And then after that, the foreigners, the orphans, and the widows were to be fed and satisfied. Okay? The refugees, the people who were new to the sojourners, the immigrants, the displaced people, okay? Those people, along with the widows, orphans, were to be cared for. And it said, and God will bless you in all your work if you care for them. Now, were they being cared for? Were they receiving what they needed to eat and be satisfied, as God had declared? It was not happening, okay? And Jesus is indignant. He's steaming, okay? Think about it. The very things that God had brought Israel to bear, the very thing that God had instructed Israel to do, they were not doing. Jesus is upset. He uses strong words, wicked. Okay. They devour widows' houses. This is a strong word. They completely consumed. When you devour something, you can completely consume it. So in the midst of all that hubbub, the brouhaha, the focus changes, and like this single gossamer seed floating across, this widow comes in. No one would have seen her. Okay. She's a poor widow. You can tell by the clothes she's wearing and the rags, the poverty. She comes in and humbly puts 2 coins into the treasury. Okay. She could have put 1 coin in and saved 1 coin for herself, for her needs. But she is exercising her own commitment to God. Her belief in his justice and goodness and faithfulness, it's an act of personal faith. It's a personal testimony. There was no requirement under the law for her to do that, to bring in her money. But she will not be denied the honor of bringing her gift to the treasury. And that's when Jesus calls his disciples. I want you to see this. This poor widow, he says, has given more than all the others who are making contributions, for they gave a tiny part of their surplus. But she, poor she is, has given everything she had to live on. She is giving her all. All to Jesus I surrender. All to Jesus. She wasn't there to ask for donations. She wasn't there to complain about being a poor widow. She could have kept 50% for herself. But she gave her all because of her belief in God's goodness and mercy and justice. Now, when you consider that this event is placed in Mark's gospel 3 days before Jesus himself gives himself to be crucified, okay, he did not hold anything back. He gave himself, all of his substance, humbly. It's a picture of Jesus giving his all. So the event of a widow giving sacrificially is not a standalone story. It's in a bigger picture. It's tucked into an unfathomable, glorious story of redemption. Because a mere 3 days after this event, 3 days after Jesus sees the widow come in, he's on a cross. He has been scourged and crucified. But the purposes of God are still being fulfilled. And Jesus, while he's on that cross, sees his mother, who is a widow, and his friend John, and says, "Behold your mother, mother, behold your son." And from that moment on, John took Mary, a widow, into his own home, it says. So God's overall plan and directive from the beginning was for Israel to bear the fruit of righteousness and compassion. And Jesus exemplifies this in his care for the marginalized and poor and widows. This is a core central emphasis. And it continues. A month and a half later, okay, 40 days later, the Holy Spirit comes and the church is born. And it says that from Luke's account, in those days, the number of disciples was increasing. The Hellenistic Jews among them complained against the Hebraic Jews because the widows were being overlooked in the daily distribution of food. So there's the early church growing rapidly. The number of disciples is multiplying. Rich and poor, men and women, slave and free, Greek and Jew, they're all bringing their offerings in for the work of the gospel. And money and goods were being donated and distributed to those in need. They were getting organized. They were prioritizing. And in the midst of that, there was a group who thought they were the widows, these Hebraic widows, had more than the widows of the Greek origin. And they complained about it. So what did the disciples do? Well, they swept it under the rug. We're not going to deal with that, okay? No, it says the disciples gathered all the believers together and they made a plan. Okay. This is amazing. All these people, rich, poor, slave, free, they're all coming together and they're going to figure something out. Okay. And they decide, we're going to set aside 7 men to take care of the widows, iron this problem out. But you can see where the widows were still an issue and God was dealing with them in a new way. And it says that God added blessing to that ministry, okay? The ministry of taking care of the widows, God added blessing to it. So the widow's story is a rich little nugget in the middle of a life-changing drama that is unfolding. You say, what does that mean for us today? So as I went through this passage, here are some things that I personally gleaned. Okay. Be indignant when you see injustice. Okay. Everywhere. But especially in the body of Christ, where we are representing the love and grace and compassion of God. It's okay to be angry about situations that are unfair. Stand up. Proverbs 31 says, speak for those who cannot speak for themselves. Ensure justice for those being crushed. Yes, speak up for the poor and helpless and see that they get their justice. It's not always possible. You can't do everything, but you can do some things. You can stand up and be counted. Number two, give sacrificially and intentionally of your time and talents and resources to the Lord according to your ability. Like the widow, you can choose to participate in the honor of giving back to God the first fruits of your life. God's not asking you to sell your house or your possessions and give it to the church for ministry. If you did, then you'd be the person in need, and we'd be ministering to you. No, according to your ability, give sacrificially. Well, you say, there's too many needs out there. I get bogged down. What should I do? Well, what I've learned is, like the early church, they gather together, and that's what our mission team does. We gather together with the resources allotted to us. We make decisions about how we're going to fairly distribute that money. Some short-term needs, immediate crisis, some needs like the food bank, they're ongoing, and some needs cross-culturally where we're helping people from a long-term perspective. Conservation, agriculture, loans to the poor, village savings and loans. So when I step back and evaluate my life and priorities, I see that becoming a follower of Jesus is really the first step in understanding God's compassion and righteousness, and in turn responding to the needs and injustices in our society. God designed the church to be the conduit of his love and compassion to widows and orphans and sojourners, to our families, to our communities, and to the world.
Thanks for joining us this week on Asbury Free Methodist Broadcast. Make sure to visit our website at asburyfmperth.com, where you can subscribe and never miss a show. If you'd like this broadcast, you might want to check out our Facebook page, Asbury Free Methodist Church. Until next week, take care and God bless.